is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. Missing Child is a new film, stars Kristen Rulin as a young woman who never knew her parents and discovers through her lover, Joe, who's played by the writer and director Luke Sabas, that she resembles an age-progressed photo in a missing child listing. So he convinces her, basically, that this might be her real family. She might be this missing child. So they set off on a little journey of their own, and they meet the man she thinks may be her father, and things take an unexpected turn. She uncovers a few secrets and a few lies in her attempt to find closure for her own past. And it's an interesting film. There's a really cool twist. I won't tell you anything more about that. For this exclusive interview, writer and director and one of the stars, Luke Sabas, is here to talk about the film, which is now available on Amazon Video On Demand, as well as there's a web series available on Amazon. You can watch it there, or it's available on Blu-ray and DVD. So either, however you want to watch Missing Child, you can do that. And in this interview, Luke goes into the process of getting this film made, what it was like picking his actors and realizing his dream of making a movie. It's a really insightful interview. I think you guys are really going to like it. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right into it. Here is my interview with Missing Child writer, director, and star, Luke Sabas.
Hi, Aaron. This is Luke Sabas.
Hey, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Where are you calling from today? Where are you at?
I'm calling from Hollywood, West Hollywood, actually, California.
Nice. How's everything going in Hollywood? Nice warm day. I'm in Chicago, so it's a little chillier here.
Okay. Yeah, it's really beautiful here. It's kind of typical Southern California weather. Very nice. It's very nice, actually.
I do want to ask. I ask everybody that I interview the same question because it's kind of fun to see where everybody's journey has taken them. When did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker? Was there a specific moment, or is it a lifelong kind of dream?
It's kind of built over sort of a lot of things I've done artistically. It kind of has built. My first artistic endeavors were with music, and from there I kind of got into acting, and then from there kind of had the idea of making a film. So it kind of was a bit of a process, that whole thing, mm-hmm. getting to the point of actually wanting to make a film.
So what was your journey to Hollywood like then?
Well, I came from New York. I grew up in New York City. And again, that's why I started playing music there. I started acting there. And I had lived there my whole life. And I wanted a change of environment. And I basically, being that I was doing, the acting thing in New York, I wanted to give Hollywood a chance and see how just give it a shot. I drove across the country and ended up really liking it here, and I kind of settled in here. I've been here for quite a while, like over 10 years, mm-hmm. so I kind of call it my home now. It's been I feel very comfortable here, actually.
Was it one of those situations where I threw everything in the car and I'm gone?
Yeah, pretty much so, yeah. I mean, again, it was the first time I had ever really moved out of New York City area, so it was a big move for me, but it was, yeah, I loaded up, I had the opportunity to move a van, an Astra van, from New York to California. It wasn't my vehicle, but just to get me over there, I was driving it over there, and I was able to load it up with all my stuff, and made the move August 2nd. So it's nice summer day when I did it.
Funny, the traffic hasn't changed from location to location for you.
Well, it's funny. It's all gotten worse. I mean, that's the amazing thing. It gets heavier and heavier everywhere, I think. Just more, I guess, denser population. Because it's a lot worse here now in California than it was when I first got here. So it is noticeably an increase in traffic. So that's the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah, that's the I-5 is a great place to hang out. So your movie, Missing Child, a young woman searching for her parents, comes across a missing child ad that may or may not be her. So where does this entire concept come from?
Well, I was looking to make a feature film, and I had just gone through the film program at Los Angeles City College. I had gone back to school just to learn a little bit more about the filmmaking. And I had the idea, I wanted to make a film. And at the time, I kept seeing these flyers in my mail, like dealing with missing children. It's sort of an ongoing thing. You'll mm-hmm. always see them if you look out for them. And I saw a few, and I just, you know, I was reading them, and you know, most of the people that were missing, they're usually like cases where they were missing, you know, pretty recently, like say in the last couple of months or maybe 6 months ago. But I noticed a few that were, there were some people missing for a very long period of time, like it could have been like 15 years, 20 years, and the case is unresolved. And those types of cases just intrigued me. It was very, you know, rather disturbing, the concept, the idea of someone being, you know, in your life missing and still, you know, having a case that's unresolved. That was sort of the seed that was planted, and I just kind of played around with that and thought about that idea and kind of came up, and the story developed out of that concept, just of someone who had been missing considered missing for a long period, you know, more than a decade or two. Mm-hmm. And is still considered missing. So I kind of went with that.
Did you have to do any other research on that topic? I mean, did you dive into it, or is it one of those where you just took it from a totally fictional perspective?
No, I definitely looked online a bit. There were cases, specific cases that mirrored what I ended up doing, or I should say missing child mirrored some of these specific cases. I mean, it's a little open-ended because, you know, it's dealing with an unresolved issue. Mm-hmm. So it definitely at some point you have to step off into the fiction and, you know, try to come up with things, because there isn't, you know, specifics about this type of thing, because it is very open-ended. But it definitely started out of a place of, you know, of real situations. And then kind of from there, I had a co-writer, Michael Barbuto, who I know from, he grew up with him in New York, and we wrote the script together, and we worked on those ideas, and just kind of worked through those things, and came up with the final story.
With this concept, did the story ever go in a different direction? It's got a cool twist, and I don't want to talk about that twist in this interview because I want people to experience it, but did it go anywhere else before what you ultimately settled on, like other story ideas?
I guess a big part that we did work with and we did do a lot of rewrites on is the first section of the film, if you maybe call it Act One.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the basic concept initially, that idea that came to me was that story that takes place once they get to the house of Henry.
Mm-hmm.
From that point to almost the end of the story was pretty much the basic concept I had always started with. The beginning portion was definitely, we worked and we bounced around a lot of different ideas and tried several different things before we ended up with, you know, what we did, you know, what we see in the film at this point.
Yeah, it goes in different directions. I really hope people check it out. You have three main leads in yourself, Charles Gargano. Did I say that right? I hope I said it right.
Yep.
And Kristen Rulin, and we know why you're in this. So it's your baby. So how did you come to Kristen and Charles?
Okay, Charles, I know from myself in acting classes in around L.A. I met him in a class, and we became friends. And through that, I did write the story with him in mind, just in terms of his age so that was pretty much a part I wrote for him. I had him in mind from the beginning, and that was easy casting. I had him. Kristen, we did some auditions for that. We had casting directors who helped us out. They did actually Kristen at the time was living in New York. We did auditions out here in California, and she submitted a tape demo, you know, a recording of herself doing the audition scenes. I really loved her audition. I made the decision off of the tape. I didn't even meet her, which was, you know, it was kind of, I had concerns about that after I made the decision. So maybe I should have met her, but I felt so certain about, based on her audition, that she was the right person, and I offered her the job, and she came out here, did it, and the rest is history, as they say. So yeah.
What about you? Did you obviously, you know, this is a great opportunity for you. You're making your own film, and you're writing, you're directing, you're starting. You know, so in terms of, were you ever concerned about your own, like, maybe I should be behind the camera or something like that, or how come to that?
I thought about it at times, and you know, while we were writing, during the writing process, I did think about that. I don't think I really was dead set on myself doing that part when we were writing it. I thought I might you know, actually get another actor to do the part. But I think as you know, the time came closer to shoot, I just thought, you know, it's a small film in terms of, you know, it was a low budget film, and I wanted to take advantage of just whatever resources I had. And in that case, myself, you know, acting. Mm-hmm. I just thought it would be a little more, you know, a little easier just to deal with one less person. You know, one less person I have to worry about showing up on the set. So that's kind of it. You know, in the end, it kind of came to the convenience type of thing. But I guess, you know, I did, you know, through the writing process, I did think about that. I thought about, well, you know, yeah, I could do this part, so why not? Didn't have any reason not to. So.
You must have been tired.
Oh, it was exhausting, the whole thing. I mean, the whole, you know, like a little, it was definitely, we're talking like, you know, 21-hour days, you know, for, it was a relatively short shoot, but the days were very long for myself and a few mm-hmm. other people. You know, I mean, for the whole crew, the days might have gone maybe the longest, or maybe a 14-hour day, which is, it's pretty long. But when you're doing other things, you know, for the production, those days definitely extend, you know, past 20 hours often. So it's kind of a crazy way of making a film.
So let me ask you, because you wore so many hats on this project, a writer, director, one of the leads in Joe, what was your biggest struggle?
Overall, I don't know. I mean, overall, it wasn't really, it didn't seem that bad while I was doing it. You know, actually in hindsight, I think, wow, that was a lot. I probably wouldn't want to do that again. But while I was doing it, I did have, you know, a lot of other good help. I mean, I had another producer, Sebastian Rogers, that really handled a lot of the production duties during the shoot itself. So, I mean, all the things that do go into a film, I mean, none of the specific jobs are really that tough. It's just, you add it all up, it does become something. But I mean, specifically, it wasn't really, I don't think anything weighed, you know, took more weight than other tasks. I mean, I think in some ways that I wish I had more time to be a director, because mm-hmm. a lot of things that I end up doing in the case where you wear a lot of hats, it's usually producing. That's usually where most of the time and effort is put. And, you know, in hindsight, I wish I could have put more time into the directing. And, you know, that's something I like to do in future films, where, you know, I would be more dedicated to the one job rather than multitasking. But, you know, while I was doing it, it wasn't a burden as much as, you know, I felt, well, maybe I could have spent just a little more time, a little more concentrated effort in that task.
Mm-hmm. Our audiences are big supporter of independent film and are always kind of curious in terms of independent film and getting one made. Like, what was that journey like for you? You realized a personal dream. You got a movie made. How was that right for you? What did you have to do to get that done?
It's mostly making the commitment to do the particular story and really, you know, having access to the funds that you know could make that film happen. You know, it was a low budget film. I had a few ideas of where I could get some money just from some resources around me. And I felt, you know, once I kind of felt, okay, it's possible, I can do it, I see the money's there, it's just a matter of now making a commitment to follow through on it. So I think a big decision is really just making that commitment, because, you know, I think, you know, anyone who does this has a lot of ideas, a lot of story ideas and film ideas, and you know, you don't always know which one can work and which one is going to attract, you know, the money and the attention. So sometimes we don't make a commitment to actually doing a particular project. We kind of get, you know, spread ourselves too thin. But I think, again, it was that decision, okay, this is the film I'm going to make, and making, you know, stepping off and doing that, then it's just a matter of grinding it out till it's finished.
Mm-hmm. And then what is the journey like? Because I know, you know, you've been working on this and getting your movie out for a couple of years now. So what has that journey right. been like for you to finally to get the movie out there? And I assume you played the festival circuit and whatnot, and then yep. ultimately yep. have it released. What's that been like for you?
It's kind of a bit of a relief now, really, for the first time, because it was, you know, we had played a bunch of festivals. We did about 5 or 6 festivals. And that's kind of a drawn out process unto itself, because, you know, it's very open ended. We don't really know where it's going with those things. So, that was a lot of fun though. You kind of get to see, you know, get the first reactions from audiences and stuff. And that's nice. and see the film also on the big screen, which I really like to do. Mm-hmm. But when we actually got it on, we got it on Amazon as of late August, you know, of just this past August. And once it was up there, it kind of was a bit of relief, kind of like, okay, now it's out. You know, it's now I can kind of sit back and see, you know, it's sort of out of my hands. You know, up to that point, it's always sort of in the, you know, the hands of the filmmakers and, you know, trying to position the film and get it to the audience, the right audience or whatever. But once you get it out, like on, you know, platforms like Amazon, it's, you know, it's sort of up to the world. The world takes the film and, you know, whatever happens at that point. So it's kind of a relief, and it's, you know, it gives it some closure to the film, getting it out somewhere. So it's kind of, you know, more comfortable looking on to the next project and so on.
So it's not an Amazon exclusive. Is it only available on Amazon?
At the moment, well, okay. It's on Amazon. It's also available in DVD, Blu-ray,
right.
Through Amazon and through our website. But right now it is just on Amazon. It's on Amazon as a feature film, and it's also on there as a web series. Like the same film is broken down into 8 webisodes, I'd call them.
Really?
And that's on Amazon as well. And it's actually free on Amazon, the web series. It's just like, yeah, some commercials that pop up beforehand. But yeah, if you went to Missing Child under Amazon Video, it should come up. Both versions should come up.
That's kind of cool. I didn't know that they did that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just something we tried. It was, you know, it wasn't like it wasn't Amazon breaking it down that way. It was, you know, we presented the film in those 2 formats, just sort of as a way of, you know, mixing it up, trying new things, of getting the film out to the two people. So
that's clever. Yeah.
So
what's next for you after you get done, I'm sure, promoting this, you're continuing promotion and whatnot, but what's next for you project wise?
I made a short film actually after Missing Child. I made a short film called Ghost Tenant, and that was, it kind of serves as a prelude to a feature film that's also named Ghost Tenant. And it's something I want to do. I kind of have a script for it. I'm kind of looking to put that together, the production together, raise money for that. And that's kind of one kind of my main focus in terms of filmmaking. Another thing I'm looking into is kind of the world of 360 video and virtual reality video. And that's something I'm playing around with right now, and it kind of intrigues me, and I'm curious to see where it goes, and it's kind of like a new medium, and you know, no one really knows where it's going in terms of entertainment. So that's something that I find interesting, and I'd like to explore a little bit more.
Oh, well, very cool. Well, thanks so much for coming by. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate having me on. Thanks.
Is there anything in closing you would want to tell people about your movie to convince them? Hey, give this one a go.
Yeah, well, you know, like, it's, as I said, it's on Amazon, and is check it out. There's, if you know, if you're not so certain about it, you want to watch the film, because, you know, it's a lot of unknown actors in the film, so it may not be your thing as far as that goes. But again, it is on there as a web series, and it's doesn't cost anything. It's just, you know, I think they run some ads beforehand, but it's you can check it out that way. And we also have a trailer out there on Amazon, and also from the website. And also, again, a Blu-ray and DVD are available on our website, and that has a lot of extras in it as well. So check it out.
Yeah, and once again, the website is missingchild-movie.com. So.
Right, yes.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Luke. Really do appreciate you coming by.
Well, I appreciate having me on, Aaron. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Best of luck, and I'll be looking for Ghost Tenant.
All right, cool. All right. Thank you. Bye.
There you go, guys. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Luke Sabas. Really nice guy. And I hope you guys will check out his movie. Once again, you can go to missingchild-movie.com if you want the website, as well as you can find the movie on Amazon. It's available for streaming. It's available on webisodes. It's available on Blu-ray and DVD as well. That's Missing Child. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, so I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Please remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Spotify or whatever podcast you use. Our normal show has a new episode each and every week, and it's available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, as well as all those other podcast places I mentioned. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, or sit comfortably on your couch and watch Missing Child, buy popcorn.